What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to MLS Box to Box on Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Yeah, what do we got here?
Yeah, what are we talking about here? What's going on?
You are meant to bring something to the table, Jimmy Brennan.
Who you're watching this week, go through the table, and top stories. So top stories for me, why don't we go through our top stories? We probably all have a different one, but I went with that Messi losing, Miami losing to Liga MX in that CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Right.
So big deal, no?
Dubs and Wonger. There's a good site for you guys to look at as well. BBC.
BBC what?
BBC Gossip. So it talks all about the not what you're thinking, Dubs. It's the British podcasting.
Big
Gossip, yeah. But it's BBC Gossip, and it tells you all about all the and everything that's going on.
Greg's on about a 4-minute delay there.
Yeah. Okay, what is this site?
The British podcast.
Put it in Google, and then don't let your kids come in.
Right.
Wow. Okay. I don't want to Google
what
it.
What it is, it's all about all the gossip and rumors that are happening in the Premier League and day-to-day in European football.
Okay.
Tells you all about the transfers, what's happening, coaches getting fired, who's not, who is. So if you look it up, if you type in BBC Gossip, and you'll see it. It'll come up, and then it'll have all the rumors. And every day, there's new stuff that's happening. Talking about, like, transfers and who could be going where and what's happening.
So as far as gossip sites go for football transfer rumors, this is the one you recommend. This is like they've vetted the rumors, they vetted the gossip.
Like, this is probably one of the best ones.
Okay. And this is relevant to us talking about the rest of MLS today as well?
Maybe.
Well, it is a little bit because it talks about a lot of the big stars coming over to MLS and it says who's interested and who wants this player. But it gives you everything that's happening.
Okay.
And that's it there, if you see it. So, and every day it's changing. Something's always happening.
Okay.
I'm going to put it in my favorites.
Yeah.
Wonger, are you hosting this thing or am I hosting this thing?
I thought you were, but I'll host.
No, I can.
All right, go ahead. Anytime you're ready.
Okay.
I think we already started.
No, I think that like we did as normal. Well.
Yeah.
And welcome. I wanted to jump off what Jimmy just said there. So this is MLS Box to Box. Welcome, everybody. We are sans James Sharman today. He's put his head in his hand and his head in the sand, and he doesn't want to talk about the fact that he's turning 50 tomorrow. So he is not here and will be missing for the next few days. We have Craig Forrest, Jimmy Brennan, Dan Wong, and I'm Amy Walsh. And this is Box to Box. Hey, Forrest. And Jimmy was just talking about a really interesting website, and we wanted to talk about a big signing about Olivier Giroud joining LAFC, possibly after spending Euro with France, and we'll join them. So, Jimmy, what's this great website? And did you want to lead us off with maybe talking some Giroux?
Sure. But it is the British Broadcasting Center gossip.
British Broadcasting Center? British Broadcasting Corporation, no?
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
BBC gossip.
Okay. Not affiliated with the BBC.
Yeah. But it's great. It's got all the transfer rumors and gossip that's going on in Premier League and European football. So it's a very good website. And then we're talking about Giroux, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's good. Look, the guy's he's an absolute animal, one of the best strikers in the world. Coming to Major League Soccer, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be banging an awful lot of goals in. TFC could have used him, that's for sure. But it's just another big name, another superstar coming to Major League Soccer. And it just seems to be the way, doesn't it, that a lot of players coming towards the end of their career that have made a name for themselves in Europe, and they want that lifestyle change, coming to North America, playing in this league, and enjoy playing in throughout the summer, where normally they're off on the summer and they're on their yachts, and this time at least they get to play football and enjoy it a little bit more. And I'm sure he's going to love the LA lifestyle, but it's good for the league, that's for sure. He's still got a lot left in his tank.
Well, he's got 12 goals, 8 assists in about 1,800 league minutes this year with Milan. And it'll be interesting to see how he slots in with Steve Cherundolo and an LAFC, where they don't really have a clear focal point of that attack and somebody to play a number nine for a manager who doesn't really like to play an out and out nine, but you give somebody to play off of Buanga, and it helps them kind of be a little bit more predictable from their own camp in their attack. And you have LAFC, who's one of the three remaining undefeated teams in MLS this year. And that was my story. We'll jump to that after. But what do you think, Forrest? I don't think this is just like a big name coming over in twilight of his career. I think this is a guy who's coming over and he's going to seek to make a real difference. Could score bags of goals and maybe more importantly, be that push for them to maybe be a true contender and push for a trophy.
Again, right? Yeah. You kind of wonder, you know, they've had success with the designated player, Bale. They pick up Lloris, which I thought was kind of a strange sort of signing, because Max Crapo was certainly capable, won an MLS final and got to the final again last year. And I kind of wonder whether these guys are just throwing names and trying to sign these big players and trying to make them fit, not necessarily fitting into what the manager does. So I'm not convinced 100% about what they're doing. Giroux is 37 years old, so they're going to have to manage his minutes as well. So, and they haven't got off to the greatest of seasons. So saying that,
he's a sexy 37 though, as Amy and I have been talking about.
Well, I mean, that's just another thing in his arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially like, going to LA though.
Like I said, being a focal point of the attack, he can just be my focal point. Let's just talk about it. Just talk about him. That
what are we talking about right now?
Because it's about marketing too, Jimmy. He can't go to Cincinnati. He can't go to Columbus because they wouldn't.
Are we talking about his look for football? What has that got to do with the price of tea in China right now?
Because we're talking about him as the archetypal center forward. Right, he can tower over a defender. Well, he can win that ball. He can hold it up.
Okay,
but he can also score bags of goals. Just kind of that presence in the box.
Does the opposition go? This guy's a handful. But by the way, you are a very handsome man.
Yes.
I think they do.
I would.
What are you doing after?
I'll let you win this header because you are very beautiful.
Yeah, they got Lloris and they were like, you're not bad looking, but we need to up our game a bit. We got to upgrade to Olivier.
No, and I say that because, Jimmy, you came over from Europe. Would you have come and played at a smaller club? You were coming. I know TFC was starting and all that, but there was fanfare. Toronto is not a small market club by any means. Would you have come over to a Columbus? Would you have come over? You know what I mean? So this is why Giroux going to LA So that, and like the marketing behind it, that's why I had that weird, at the beginning of the season, I was talking about Larris. I found it when we were talking to Hercules. I found that a weird signing as a marquee player. And Craig was, you know, as a keeper on my side saying, yeah, and I did find it strange. So that's why I think Giroux, with his good looks, with his A game, all of that has a big play in MLS compared to a Lloris. That's all. So him being a good looking dude has as much to do with his game as everything else about him coming over. That's all I'm saying. There's a real marketing play.
If he was ugly, they wouldn't sign him.
Yeah. Unless he was Rooney ugly.
If he was circus boxing in the kitchen Rooney,
then yes, they'd sign him.
Yeah. They wouldn't have signed Messi. They were like, you're just too short, not the best looking. Decent feet.
Yeah, not what we're looking for in LA.
But to go back to him as a player and his quality, so he's gonna come into that second half of the season. I don't think it matters if he becomes a starter or if he comes on and just has a little bit of minutes and looks to sort of shore up the attack that way, but he's going to contribute. And I'm not worried about those 37-year-old legs because, you know, the lack of running, you look at a guy like Vela in the past, he's not covering a whole lot of ground. And now you have a guy with his physical qualities who can just sort of set up camp and occupy center backs. And you've got Bouanga who can play off of him. So I like that prospect a lot and how he's going to fit in.
I'll tell you this now, right? When you are a defender and when you've got a good target, and even for goalkeepers as well, when you got a big body up top, it's a dream. And the reason being is because the amount of times that you receive the ball, you open up and you look, and if you got that big target guy that you can play it into his chest or he's good with flick-ons, he can hold it up, it's the best outlet that you can have.
Yeah,
and even for keepers, when they're looking up and they see the big body, it's like, boom, let's play it over there. But I'm sure that the defenders, the fullbacks, center back, goalkeepers, they'll be buzzing that they got a big target now that they can play off of. That's for sure.
It's the best bailout in the absence of Gareth Bale.
Yeah. Dum-dum. Hey. Boom.
And you got to expect, I think, Forrest, a guy like Lloris is thrilled about it as well. And do you think that their track record, to that point from the goalkeeper's perspective, but just LAFC in general, to be able to pull these big names, makes it easier for them to continue to do it because they've pulled the names in the past? Do you think that's reassuring from a player's perspective?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm sure they've done a lot of homework. And then obviously with Lloris being signed and him giving the heads up of what's going on in Los Angeles and what they're trying to do and the success that they've had with those designated players. And then overly in the league, designated players have generally done pretty well. The attacking players have done very, very well, even the older ones. So high hopes for Giroux.
Yeah. Yep. Still a fair amount of time, though, before we get post-Euros to that second half of the season. But the story that I wanted to talk about is that there are three unbeaten teams that remain. And LAFC's chief rival, LA Galaxy, is one of them. So they sit first in the West. FC Cincinnati is the other, sitting first in the East. And then Philadelphia Union, seventh in the East, but they have 9 points from five games. So what do you guys think about this? And I wanted to relate it back to, you know, with the expanded playoff format, does a good start really matter as much as we think, or is what's more important the way that you build on perhaps early success, Craig Forrest?
Yeah. It's a different league, isn't it? When, I mean, you're looking at the rest of the world football and how it works and operates, that the playoff system is something that you need to be going into on a run, on a roll, feeling good and confident and healthy, as opposed to a good start. So there is that. You can see how Miami are sort of orchestrating their season around Champions League or Champions CONCACAF Cup, MLS games. They've left Messi out a lot, managing his minutes a lot. Suarez is going to have to keep an eye on him. But it is an interesting situation with this league. And you can see that Miami are putting their eggs into that CONCACAF championship as opposed to MLS at this moment. That is what their priority is because of the way the league is. So it is a different setup.
Yeah. I think with teams, for instance, like a Cincinnati last year, they end up finishing first in the Eastern Conference, didn't they, throughout the regular season. So for them this season now, and they're at the top, they haven't lost, it's that momentum again. Okay, this is where we were. Now we got to keep going. We got to push ourselves because we want to win everything. Whereas LA Galaxy last year finished 13th in the Western Conference. So for them now, all of a sudden, to be sitting at the top of the table, this is a huge step for them and their confidence.
Yeah,
and rebuilding of what they've built on or what they had last year. So this is massive for them. So it is important that LA, a team like that, does get the results early doors because now they've got something to build off of.
I'm going to put my dunce cap on too, Amy, if I can use that word.
I thought we were trying to get that out of our vernacular.
Well, the cone's really high today. Expanded playoff for MLS. I didn't know this. So explain what's going on with that.
I think this is part of what added to the narrative of Craig Forrest hates MLS. It was, you know, his disdain towards this deeper playoff sort of access where 9 teams from each conference go in and then there's the play-in.
Oh, the play-in.
So that, you know all about this. Yes, this happened last year.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It goes back to this. Yeah, you can remove it now. We talked about this. Last year where it's de-emphasizing or it's devaluing in a way your regular season to say that, you know, it's a much easier path to get into the postseason. Teams still have to do it, but in, you know, you're playing 34 games. It just means that you can, you know, your teams aren't going to be eliminated until quite late. And if you have a run of bad form from the get-go, you can still hang. Yeah. You know, and a team like, say, Minnesota last year started really well and they had a shambolic second half of the season. But you have other teams who can start quite poorly and then really turn things around, which is why, you know, a second half signing like an Olivier Giroud could really put teams over the top and their ability to pull big names and to get them over the line in that sense. But I wanted to go back and Forrest, get your take on the Galaxy because – Jimmy, you pointed out they did have quite a disappointing year last year. But now under Greg Vanney, you've got Ricky Pooch, you've got Jovalich, you've got Paintsill, you've got, you know, that really elite attack all of a sudden, and a team that wants to play, you know, progressively and positively. So I think they're a team that this isn't going to be a blip. I think this is something they've started strong. And they're going to look to double down on that and continue that form.
It's interesting, too. I mean, with this league that you can go from being so poor to being a contender really overnight. And there's something attractive about that. I don't like 19 or 18 teams making the playoffs. I think that's just...
We know.
Yeah, it should be a little bit more to the regular season than that for my money. But the MLS likes it because, obviously... it keeps teams right in there, like you just said, right to the very end to have a chance to slip into that play-in. But I think LA Galaxy are a team that have turned things around really, really well with these signings and their belief, obviously, in Vanney as well.
Yeah. And they're a team they're fun to watch at the moment, and they can score a goal. They can score goals, that's for sure. And they struggled with that last year.
I think the league like it when LA Galaxy and LAFC are doing well. Like Dan said, Wonger says, like the major markets are always.
Who? Who's this Dan guy?
He's the guy in the corner with the dunce cap. Dan in the dunce cap.
No, you're right. They are. What would you say the three biggest markets are and the most attractive for players coming over?
New York, LA,
Miami.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I'd say Chicago,
you know the answer to your question before you posed it.
Yeah, because I wanted to hear your
view. Do you agree?
And because my next question to you guys is that an advantage for those organizations?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Is it fair with a league that wants parity, yet they keep getting all the superstars?
They don't care.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the brand and the league and wanting to be relevant, and they're going to push and support these teams getting the, you know, getting all the eyeballs on them and getting these big stars in, because it helps generate perhaps income, but it also just helps to generate discussions and talk and narratives around the league via your big markets.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem with Chicago is if you're trying to sell it to the players and you bring somebody over and you're like, oh, you're down. I like downtown. That's a lovely city, right? And then you go out to the stadium. It's like, yeah, it's going to take us about 45 minutes to get out there, maybe an hour. And you can't get out of your car because you might get freaking shot.
Oh, dear.
It's a terrible area. Like at the stadium, it was short-sighted. And any of those owners that took the cheap land and built in wrong areas has not really, really done very well. It's a commitment in Chicago. I've done so many games there. It's a commitment there to go to a game. And that's why they struggle with their
Well, they were talking about the Crafts in New England building a new soccer specific stadium, and they showed a model of it, and it looks spectacular, and it doesn't look like something out of place. It's closer, all of the above, to what Craig's saying. And this is the problem with that. Hey, let's go out to the suburbs. If you're in the city, you want it to be, hey, available on, I mean, look, BMO is positioned. Jimmy played there. What a place to play when it's full, right? I mean, we've seen national games there. We've seen, championship qualifying games. It's a great place, even if it only holds 25,000, right?
Yeah, because so, the culture around it is no good, right?
Yeah, because people forget, like, with our sport, it's an urban game. It's very, very urban. You know, with American football, yeah, you can put it out in the suburbs and people will drive out and they'll tailgate and they'll have fun. Our sport, you need to be downtown in the pub socializing, and then everybody walks over to the stadiums. I mean, that's one of the reasons. And Craig's bang on, because I played at the Toyota Field that was out in the middle of nowhere.
Where's that? That's the Chicago one, Jimmy?
That was Chicago, okay. Yeah. And last year they've actually moved the team and they put them actually at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
So that's where they're playing at the moment. But then again, you're playing in a stadium that's 60, 70,000 seats. It's way too much. So I don't know what the next plan for Chicago Fire is. Are they going to build a stadium downtown? But they need to figure that out. And then with the Crafts, yeah, they've been talking for years that they want to bring the stadium into Boston and get that urban feel again, kind of like a Fenway Park sort of thing.
Right.
Where you're right in the middle of all the restaurants, bars, and it becomes a focal point for those communities. So hopefully they end up doing that with New England.
Well, like what the Citigroup's finally going to be doing for NYCFC with the Cube.
Yeah.
So it goes back to your original point, Jimmy, about these big markets are they at an unfair advantage in a league where you want to see parity? I mean, that's an unfair advantage to be building the state-of-the-art stadium in Manhattan just because your ownership has deep pockets, but the league's not going to disallow them from doing that. That's going to be incredible for the game in North America. That's going to be a destination, I think, worldwide.
For sure it will. 100%. Yeah. 100%. If you're a player over in Europe and you got New York FC calls you and they've got a brand new stadium in Manhattan, come on. Of course you're going to go. If LA calls you, you're going to go. Now, if a Nashville or Cincinnati says, hey, we're interested, you're like, I'm not sure about that. But
those Nashville's a great city, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they don't know much. They don't know about it like we know about
it. No, they don't.
Sorry, Dubs, I was going to ask you, where did you play when you played in Atlanta? Where was the stadium?
Oh, I think we were at the University of Georgia.
Okay. So was that downtown? Like, was it a POC enclave of downtown or was it outside in the suburbs?
No, it was kind of downtown without it being like right downtown, but you were city center.
Right.
But what was funny about that is kind of making space and carving out space for the women's game back then. And in 2001, we had the football coach complaining that we were tearing up the field. We're like,
right.
Yeah, it's us. 130 pounds of us in our football cleats are tearing up your field. Sure.
Right. Well, it's funny. I do see a lot of parallels between MLS in North America and NHL, right? The Montreal Canadiens, I was just in Montreal. They have the new Bell Center, the keg, they call it. is right downtown, and the Forum was right downtown. In Ottawa, they put it out in Kanata, and now they're talking about bringing the stadiums into the city center. And they're doing the same, you know, they're the same conversations about urbanization, and the areas need to be, instead of trucking people out to the middle of the suburbs, it's the opposite. Bring business downtown, have rejuvenated excitement and buzz downtown. And I think that's how MLS wins. Instead of it being a suburb game, make it a downtown. Everyone's excited about coming downtown, you know, and make it an event. Mm-hmm. You come down at 5, you go to the pub, like Jimmy said, you walk over, all comes into the city square. And on a CPL level, we have Halifax. Who's done that? You know, so if we're going to talk all these different places, even with LAFC, when I'm seeing their support, when they were the, you know, they were Chivas at one point, right, Gregor? Is that part, right?
No, they had Chivas and LA Galaxy.
Oh, but didn't LAFC become Chivas? Or Chivas become LAFC?
No.
Oh, okay.
They folded.
Oh, they folded. Okay, but that urbanization, though, it's a paradigm that can be kind of let's copy this, because it's a city thing. Let's cheer for our city. Yeah. And I think that's what's important.
The problem is a cultural
thing that everybody embraces.
That's right.
It is a cultural thing, but I guess when you look at Manhattan, you're looking at Chicago.
Yeah.
The land's pretty expensive, and this is kind of the problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where my head went as well. But then it goes back to our conversation about philanthropy and Kevin Blue and his project to try to get money generated and engine for sponsorship and all that stuff to support our national teams and our sport in this country, where you don't get very much money injected from the government to support sports. And then, you know, you look at the municipal governments and mayors and things like that, sports are not a priority. But if they thought about it in that way, the way that you framed it, Wonger, about bringing a stadium to the epicenter of everything, that helps everybody. That helps businesses. That helps it be like a destination for everybody. And it just seems to me like it's a win-win at that point.
There's a really good story with Brooklyn, you know, going the Barclays Center from New Jersey, the Nets turning into the Brooklyn Nets. And now that's a place that people want to go see basketball. And it changes the approach. Instead of going out to the Meadowlands and playing in New Jersey, you're staying downtown. If you're a baller or a Jersey fan, you're heading out into the middle of the suburbs again, a 45 to an hour ride. It's something to come downtown to. And I think Toronto did it properly, LAFC, all of the above. There's, you know, like I said, there's betas that people can follow and franchises can follow.
Yeah, it's a really interesting discussion, and it's all done kind of via the lens of sport. Forrest, did you bring anything to the table here that you wanted to hit on from an MLS perspective?
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
Only the fact, I just, there's certain players or people that I'm looking at, but Hugo Lloris is one that I'm sort of intrigued about, being a former goalkeeper and seeing how he's doing. And generally speaking, outside of that Real Salt Lake game when it was snowing, it was really bad. He's actually played pretty well, man of the match in one match, I know, at least. So he's actually performed fairly well so far.
Yeah, interesting. Somebody else I wanted to talk about was Chicho Arango, and you mentioned Real Salt Lake. So he's leading right now with goal contributions, and the Colombian had a hat trick on the weekend to take down St. Louis City. So, you know, he's a guy that he at LAFC before, and then he went down to Pachuca, and then for $6 million, Real Salt Lake got him. And I think everybody across the league, and I mean, we mentioned Chicago before, they signed Hugo Kuipers for $12 million from Ghent, I believe. So $6 million all of a sudden is looking like a pretty good deal and a steal in a way. You know, that he had this all around modern striker. who has 41 goals and 68 career regular season games. And he's just sort of had a transformative beginning of the season for Real Salt Lake. So that's a player that I'm following closely. Were you looking at anybody, Jimmy?
No, you're right. When you talk about players like this and money that's spent on them, you know, it's still very early. I mean, we're six games in. They've had a number of home games. I think that Salt Lake's had three home games now. They've had some good results. I think they're sitting third right now in the Western Conference. But, you know, this is a league that it's very grueling. And what I mean by that is that there's so much travel. You've got to deal with all the elements, whether you're going to Houston, you're playing in the humidity, or all of a sudden now you're in Salt Lake and you're in altitude, and then you're going to Miami, you're playing in, again, in humidity, heat, and you're coming up to Toronto where we've just had a snowfall. So it does take a toll on the players. And it seems to make you a little bit harder, but you've got to be able to adapt and willing to adapt. And if you don't, you can fall in that trap very quick where, you know, you've come in for a cup of coffee and then you're out the door again. So you're hoping that these players that do come in, they adapt quickly and they continue to perform. So it's still very early, but I'm always very curious to see how the foreigners come into this league and how well they adapt to it.
Yeah, because it can be a bit of a slog. I think the geography probably takes them by surprise, right? Like just in the travel around it. I mean, you mentioned all the temperature variations and things that they might encounter. And Forrest mentioned that game in the snow. So there's a whole lot that can be thrown at players. I think that they're not aware of, or that just takes them completely by surprise because it's not something that you encounter in Europe or in the rest of the world.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine in Europe and you know what, you got a couple hour bus ride that you're used to taking. And all of a sudden now you're going to Vancouver and it's okay. We're getting off. How long is the flight? 5.5 hours. What? I'm sorry. What did you say?
Yeah.
And it's a 3 hour time zone as well. What do you mean? Yeah. 3 hour time zone. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's crazy, right?
We could fly from London, England to Moscow in less than that.
Yeah.
Even their European flights are short usually. You
know? And your economy.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the biggest shock, Jimmy, do you think for you or even players coming over from other parts of the world? It seems to be a bigger deal to travel than I would have thought.
Yeah, it really is, Stacks. And you got to think, especially for the Canadian teams as well, because you're not going through domestic, you're going through customs.
Yeah,
right. To get into America. So you're leaving and you got to be at the airport, 2.5-3 hours sometimes before, because you got all the gear that's got to get through. Then you got to go through customs. And so if you got 3 hours and say you're flying to LA, there's another 5.5 hours. So already you're at 8 hours near enough just in your travel. And then mm-hmm. you get to the other side, you've got to wait for everything to come through, which is another hour before you get in the bus. And then you're talking 45 minutes, an hour. So like that whole journey to get to the West Coast is an absolute nightmare. It's almost like half a day. Mm-hmm. And then you've got that 3 hour time zone. So you do get back to your hotel and you're sitting there and you're trying to adjust, and it is horrible.
Ordering adult movies on cable. Yeah. From back in the day when there was no internet.
Going to BBC Gossip.
But it does. It takes a toll.
Jimmy, I wanted to ask you, now that as a former manager, when, especially in MLS now that there's the CONCACAF Champions Cup, there's these USL Cup that we're so interested in now, or USA Cup. Or
US Open.
US Open, sorry. But the Canada Championships, all of these tournaments now, does it matter when you're a player who's performing in other, like not league matches, but you're performing in other spaces like these tournaments? As a manager, does it make a difference, or are you just looking at their play on the field, or is it looking on their play on the field in certain tournaments, or whether it's regular season? You know,
no, I mean, yeah, you're constantly watching the players. I think I understand what you're saying.
Sorry, so weirdly asked question, but it's basically, does it matter what the match is, whether it's regular season or tournament?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the year, you look at it and think, okay, what's our targets? What do we want to do? What do we want to hit? okay, so we want to our domestic league, we want to get to playoffs. Okay, so that's a main focus. And then if you've got the Canada Cup, okay, the first couple of rounds we're going to play, we're not going to play the starters. We'll play a lot of the reserve players until we start getting into the semis or final. And then we're going to play our first team players. Okay, so we monitor that. And then you...
Sorry to interrupt, Jimmy. That's where you see Wonger oftentimes, this your second goalkeeper who maybe hasn't gotten any minutes. He'll get a run out in Canadian Championships. And it'll be his net for that competition.
Yeah. And then... any other tournaments you start looking at thinking, okay, you know, is this a priority for us? And then again, you're looking at your squad and you rest players, or maybe you're not, because maybe that's another focus as well. That's something that you want to have a good run in. So there, you've got your individual goals throughout the season of what you want to hit, but that's why the importance of having a deep squad helps you as well fulfill those goals that you're trying to achieve. Right. You don't want to just be relying on, you know, 13, 14 players because the rest isn't good enough. Right. So you have to have a good squad in depth.
So you have I'll give you an example. Jacob Schaffelberg had a great run with the national team, Canadian national team, scoring against Trinidad. His regular season play hasn't been as good as his for the national team, other than his first kind of, hey, I beat Messi in that. You got two goals at the top of the season. But if his play is better in these tournaments, let's say, you know, does it make a difference on when you're estimating how he's playing? Does he get more playing time? You know, if he's only playing well in tournament or national side.
Yeah, but the club doesn't look, they don't care about your national team and what you're doing.
Okay.
Their focus is the club and what they need to focus on. So they could look at Schaffelberg and go, okay, brilliant. You know, you scored a goal against Trinidad and you came on. Okay, that's nice. But their focus is you training every day, you playing week in and week out in their competition. Not right. It doesn't matter about international.
Okay.
Yeah, never. But if your question, Wonger, is about how do you weight those performances, I don't think it changes
it is.
The competition, whether it's U.S. Open Cup or whether it's CCC or whether it's MLS league play. I think if you're performing, you're able to have goal contributions, you're able to be lively, you're able to look dominant. That's something that the coach values then. And that's whether it's the national team coach who's watching and scouting or whether that's your own coach for Nashville in Schaffelberg's case.
Thank you for being translating for me, Wonger Whisperer Dub.
But it also goes back kind of at the beginning, Forrest, I think you mentioned it, or maybe you did, Wonger, that Miami lost 2-1 to Monterey mm-hmm. last night in the CCC. So that has been a priority publicly for Tata Martino. So, you know, do they have to take a look now? I mean, yes, Messi's had that sort of that niggle, that hamstring injury now that's caused him to miss, I think, the last four games. They obviously have other players at their disposal in their arsenal, a very deep roster. I mean, to your point, Jimmy, that you need in order to navigate these types of competitions, especially when you're spread thin across them. But when you've gone out and said, we want to win this, and now these Mexican teams in CCC, I think much as we expected after Miami won the famed League's Cup, these Mexican teams have come back with a vengeance now in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So, you know, does a team for us like Miami, is this kind of a wake-up call for them, or do they just keep going, kind of keep plugging away as normal and try to get the wins in league play and then, but also still try to put their eggs into this proverbial CCC basket?
Yeah. I don't know about this League's Cup. I've never been too excited about that, but it depends on what they think, I guess. But I don't think it's surprising to any of the MLS teams when they play against Mexican sides, because they've generally dominated MLS. For the most part, over the years, the Mexican sides are strong.
And at this point in the season, six games into MLS, where teams, you know, were navigating preseason not too long ago, you're facing Mexican sides who are running on, you know, they're running at full tilt, right? Full steam ahead. So it's no surprise to me either that MLS teams are on the wrong ends of a lot of these early results.
In Miami, remember that preseason tour? I mean, how much is that going to take out of them? they were over in China. They were over in Middle East.
All that travel, yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't go particularly brilliantly. And I'm sure the players are like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. Because that's not only the physical toll, but that's the mental and the emotional slog of it as well, being away from your family, long flights, and just sort of looking at what's ahead of you and trying to navigate it properly. And when you do get up there, sure, you have to take a look at, like, physically what's in these legs. When you know, we're talking about Suarez or talking about a guy like Giroud, but it's the mental aspect too. Don't you think, Jimmy?
It's the mental aspect, but it's the physical battle. I remember we went to Malaysia for preseason when I was in Norwich, and it was nowhere near the same preseason as what we would have done in Europe than what we did there. And because the humidity, the heat, you were training at different times. It was either first thing in the morning at like 6 a.m. you're training, or you were training late in the evening. So to adapt to it and change to it, I mean, yeah, you get fit, but it wasn't the same, because even the preseason games, the tempo was so much slower than what it should have been if it was in Europe, right? So you're playing a 5-6 o'clock game and it's 98 degrees out and humidity at 60%. You're not playing the same way that you would have had a preseason if you were in Europe, right? So you don't get the same out of it as what you would have normally gotten out of it when you do these travel.
Most of these clubs are at that point, they're looking for value. They're looking at their branding and they're looking at all these different things. But I think from the player standpoint or the management, they're like, this isn't ideal. We did the same thing. Even the Scandinavian preseason trips, they were pretty organized, and you know, the weather was similar to what it was in England for the most part. So the training wasn't too bad. But when we went to the we went to the USSR back in the day behind the Iron Curtain in 1989. And man, oh man, we were there for 2.5 weeks and eating, and the food was just wasn't good enough for what you're trying to do and accomplish when you're training so hard and you're eating poor food that it didn't put us in a good position coming back to the start of this for the start of the season.
What was the point of going there?
I was going to say.
Well, we actually signed the first player to be allowed to leave the USSR, actually allowed to go, was a guy called Sergei Beltacha. And Ipswich signed him. And part of the deal was to go back to the USSR and do like a traveling roadshow around Russia, which is now Russia, and Ukraine, actually. We took a train we were supposed to fly from Moscow to Kiev, and we got there and they're like, no, we're taking a train. Oh, how long is that? 10, 12 hours, something like that.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the worst preseason that you ever had?
It was the worst and the best, because it was so interesting and we were being watched so carefully. And Sergei was telling us everything in hotel rooms and everything else. So they're listening to everything you're saying, and they're very suspicious about what's going on. And even in his house, he had an apartment, he had a secret room in there that he kept a lot of valuables, because he didn't supposed to be being paid more than anybody else. But what they did do is give you perks, and it might be a gold lantern or something or something else, or like, so he just had all these like silver and gold.
Did you rub the lantern? Did he get how many wishes did he get?
Yeah, Sergei rubbed a few lanterns. He was a great
rubbed a lantern.
Jeez. Even in MLS box to box, we have to go down that road.
Yeah. And then interesting enough about Sergei being, he was just a super guy, didn't know a lick of English, and neither did his wife or two kids. They're young at the time. Elena Beltacha ended up being the number one British tennis player.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. But unfortunately, she had an illness. I can't remember what it was, something to do with her liver, I want to say. And she passed away.
Oh no. Geez.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Sergei Jr.
Went downhill quick, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And then Sergei Jr. was not a bad footballer. I think he played a little bit in Scotland. But interesting story about that family and Sergei and everything else, but a terrific opportunity to be able to see that.
Crazy. Was there anything?
Where do you go from there?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to try to brighten this up a bit.
I think we're out of time. I don't think we can go anywhere from there.
I'm going to rub the lantern and figure out how to end this.
Hey, I'm going to rub the lantern and I have three wishes. Can we not end with that story? That's my first wish. Very interesting, though, Greg Forrest.
You know, some of those guys, when you think back in those days, too, like a guy like Ludwig McClosco came to West Ham from former Czechoslovakia. And the stories he tells about, you know, the communist rule and how football worked. And they would basically, and he did it a few times where they would threaten them with a poor performance. You guys are going to go down the mines. And he found himself down the mines on a few occasions. Just different world. So, and he came to England when he was, I believe, 30 and had probably 7 or 8 really good years there, but he missed out on so much as far as financially goes because he technically wasn't being paid until he was 30 years of age.
Wow. Dubs, yes. I think it's time to rub that lantern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say stories like that really put kind of MLS and navigating 3 different competitions and the mental, physical, emotional toll and all that. It puts that into perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're staring down the barrel of going down to the mines after a poor performance, like
right. Or you know, when you look at
La Liga, pretty good.
Even today, they don't get paid on time, or they can't get their last payment, and you know, certain countries have a reputation for that. I know Turkey used to.
They're sounds always like women's football.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you might not get paid your salary or
okay.
From
I think
a league.
We're out of time.
That's why I think also today when you look at it, you know, you've got players' unions as well. And that people don't realize just how important a players' union is to make sure that you do get paid on time, you get looked after as a player. And you think Major League Soccer over the years, how far they've come along and how much the players have actually pushed to be united and to make sure that they have been looked after. Because, you know, throughout the world, you hear all the horror stories of players not getting paid. They don't have this. They don't have that. So.
Poor conditions. Like correct. It's important, yeah, that's there on the men's side and the women's side to make sure that those standards are upheld.
Yeah.
So that players feel safe first and foremost, but that they, you know, get paid on time and can make a living wage. Okay, that is all the time that we have on MLS Box to Box. Thanks for tuning in. We've had Craig Forrest, Jimmy Brennan, and Dan the Dunks Wonger. No James Sherman. Happy 50th, James Sherman.
We've got to do some promo. We have our 3 questions out this week. TFC, Whitecap, CF Montreal. Our YouTube, new stuff from Wonger's Mail Sack. Get in there. There's people who are making comments. Please subscribe. Helps us out. We are Footy Prime. You can find all of our content. We are footyprime.com. And, of course, subscribe on all your podcast platforms. Thanks, everyone at TonyBet and FuboTV.com/FootyPrime to subscribe.
Supporting independent podcasts. Cheers for listening, everybody.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by FuboTV and by TonyBet. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit WeAreFootyPrime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
And we're done.
And recording?
And recording.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/FootyPrime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening and back to the show. Oh.